So now we come to chapter 6, which is about production planning. In the agenda, we will briefly look at the introduction. What is production planning? What are the strategies in production planning? What is the master production schedule? Production schedule design considerations. What are the inputs and outputs from a master production schedule? And then briefly, we'll look at the summary. So, introduction to production planning. After establishing the strategic plan and the business plan, the process of setting the overall level of manufacturing output consistent with the above plan is known as the production planning. So production planning is more like a tactical plan. So you have the strategic plan and the business plan. Business plan is normally for a year. And the production plan is generally for a month or the planning horizon, which is the short-term planning horizon. So you are deciding for a month, let's say that this is what I'm going to produce within the month. Production planning is concerned with the quantities of each product group to be manufactured in each period. So you also have a production planning which actually extends into the near future. So like we said that we have demand plan or the demand forecast, which is for a certain horizon. Likewise, the production planning is also for a certain horizon where you make a tentative plan, to say that this is what I'm going to produce. And it need not be very granular. That means you need not exactly in a production plan talk about, the SKU or the finished product by each category. You can also broadly talk about, the group. So if you're talking of an automobile, you're talking of one particular model, and probably you're not talking of the different variants which are there under that model. Production plan includes the planning of the manufacturing facilities required to support the business plan. So introduction to the production planning. The production control is mainly involved in implementing the production schedules and is the corollary to short-term production planning or scheduling. So this we discussed that it's short-term meaning 1 month, and maybe you also have a tentative plan for another 2 months or so. Production control includes initiating production, dispatching items, progressing, and then finally reporting back to the production planning. So one is the planning, the other is the control. Planning is where you make the plan. Control is where you are actually executing the production plan. In general terms, production planning means planning of work to be done later, and production control refers to the implementation of the plan, which we just talked about, that one is planning, one is the execution. The system of production planning and control serves as the nervous system of a plant, rightly so, because this is the starting point. Once you have finalized based on your demand plan, etc., what you're going to produce in the month, and here at this point of time you have not said exactly by the finished product what are the quantities you're going to make and by which time you're going to make it. This is a high level plan where you say, okay, I'm going to assemble so many cars of this model and so many cars of this model overall. The finer level planning comes in the subsequent stages, which we will see. So it's a coordinating agency which coordinates the activities of engineering, purchase, production, selling, and stock control department. An efficient system of production planning and control helps in providing better and more economic goods to customers at lower investment, thus improving overall efficiency of entire supply chain. This is a high level planning. We have already seen the MRP and the briefly we have also discussed the master production schedule. So here this is the high level planning which basically drives some of the downstream activities. So you can say that the production planning is the next step after the SIOP. So what are the objectives of the production planning? So one, it has to make realistic and valid plans. realistic because they have to be, you know, grounded plans which are emerging from the SIOP or S&OP as we call it. Integration with other activities of the business plan. It has to be, you know, integrated with any new model introduction, any product upgradation, any promotions. So, because otherwise, if you're making a promotion and if you're not, you know, linking that to your production plan, then the promotions may generate additional sales, but then you will not have the stocks to sell. So, it's important that you integrate it with other business plan activities. To involve the top management in decision making, because when you're making a high level plan, then the top management is also involved in giving a direction to the plan. Linking planning levels to form the link between the higher planning levels and the next detail planning level of master production schedule. So one is, you know, you have, we said, the strategic plan, then you have the business plan, and here this production planning is the link between the business plan and the master production schedule. So it's a intermediate step. And why do you say that it's a intermediate step? Because business plan again is a high level plan. It's a aspiration that you have built at the beginning of the year, saying that this year this is what we are going to make. You have plans for revenue, you have plans for margins. And the production plan is one step where you deploy the revenue and the margin plan for that particular month, driving the master production schedule. So to form the input to and drive the master production schedule and the subsequent short range planning activities of the planning system. So basically, production planning is the one which drives the master production schedule. That is the major input to master production schedule. So what are the benefits of production planning? Better service to the customer. So you are exactly looking at what the market requires and you are making a high level plan of the same. So if you have planned correctly, you will have fewer rush orders. You will have better control of the inventory. So you will not have either stock out on one hand or excess inventory on the other. More efficient use of the equipment because you don't need to do a frequent changeover. Every time you change over, there is a downtime of the equipment. Like we talked about in the chemical industry, if you are making the material, you know, as per a certain system, changeover is not necessary. You don't need to wash the equipment. But if you suddenly have to change, then you will have to incur a downtime. Like one example that I can remember of is the paper industry. In paper industry, they always change the felt and the wires, and they start by making the finest quality paper. So the long fiber pulp, you know, which will be used for very thin, low GSM paper, which will be, you know, of very high quality, is made. Now, once that production is over, then they will take the next grade, which may be a little more crude or a little less refined kind of a paper. And finally, they will be using recycled pulp, and the last thing will be maybe they will make a craft paper, you know, which is the brown paper which is required for packaging, etc. And once this production run is over, they have to actually shut down the mill, they have to completely wash the mill, they have to change the felt, you know, which carries the paper through the various calendaring or drying stands, etc. And suppose because of an urgency, you have to stop the production midway and start making a superior quality of paper, then you will have to incur this downtime, which normally, let's say you are doing it once in a week or once in a fortnight, you will have to do it maybe in just 3 days or 4 days of having changed the felt, etc. So, you know, you better make better use of the equipment if you have a proper planning in place, so you don't have frequent changes, etc. Reduce the idle time. We just talked about it. Idle time can be on two accounts. One is because of the changeover. The other could be if the planning is not correct, you will have some equipment which are idling and some equipments which are overloaded. That means they have got material waiting to be processed. Improved plant morale. So when everything is running smoothly, the morale of the people will be good. People will be less stressed, they will be more organized, and it will deliver better results. Good public image. So nobody likes, you know, to be told, you try, I mean, go to a shop and you want to buy something and you are told that sorry, but we are not getting this product from the company. So maybe this is an opportunity, you will try something else and you may change over to another brand, the competition brand. So the public image also matters, that if you are ensuring that your product is always available on the shelf, or you know, if it's a item which is to be purchased in a showroom or so, then it not only aids your business but also gives you a better image. Lower capital requirement, because if you're doing effective planning, you're managing your inventories, you know, you don't have stock outs, you don't have excess inventories, it'll also give you benefits in terms of capital requirement. Your working capital will be less. So there are various strategies as far as production planning is concerned. There is the chase strategy, the level strategy, subcontract strategy, and a hybrid or a compromise strategy. We will look what these strategies are. So chase strategy, this strategy is also known as the demand matching strategy, as it involves producing the amount of goods required to exactly meet the demand at any given point of time. Since the production matches demand, production varies according to the demand, resulting in the inventory to be constant. So here in this particular case, this model is used, one where you are making custom products. That means I talked about my experience having worked in a flexible packaging unit, where if you are making packaging for, let's say, a pharmaceutical tablet, you are printing the name of the product in the license number, etc. Now the product could be made at two units of the same pharma company, in which case the printed matter is different for both the units, because there are license numbers, there is an address of the manufacturer which has to come on the packing. So you can never make this product and keep it in stock. You cannot make to stock this product. So in such a case, you follow this strategy. So you get an order and you are always making the material as per the demand. So demand here is a firm order. Another example, Dell computers. We already talked about this in the earlier chapter, that they have a philosophy that they will make the material or the product, which could be a laptop or a tab or whatever, as per the actual demand that they have. So somebody places an order and the machine will be assembled. So this is a classic example of a chase strategy, where you are making based on the demand. Since the production matches the demand, production varies according to the demand. So higher the demand, higher the production. Lower demand, the production will be lower. But you will not be making material, you know, and just keeping it in stock. The advantage of this strategy is that constant level of inventory can be maintained, but there is a variation in the production capacity based on the variation in the production rate. So we saw this. You may be maintaining a certain inventory, you know, to take care of the transit times or your speed to the market. So it may, if you are talking of make to order, so there is of course no inventory to be maintained. But if there is a requirement, so you are making something, for example, let's talk about toothpaste. We have the demand going up and down and we maintain some inventory. So in this case, what you do is, whatever safety stock or the inventory levels that you maintain, either at your end or the distributor's end, is more or less constant. So if the demand is going up, you make more. If the demand is coming down, you produce less, but the inventory level more or less remains the same. The chase strategy has several advantages, like it keeps the inventory low, which frees up cash for other business priorities. very clear, because you are not holding much inventory, or you are using minimum or holding minimum inventory. coming to the level strategy. So level strategy or production leveling strategy involves producing in each period an equal amount equal to the average of the total demand for a product, for a given planning horizon. So let's say your planning horizon is 3 months. Now you have a month-to-month variation in the demand. 1 month you have got a demand for, let's say, 100, another month it is 120, another month it's 80. So your average, if you look at, is 100. So in the horizon, 300 is your requirement, but your average is 100. Then you continue to make only 100 numbers. So this is the level strategy. Since the production is leveled, the production rate remains constant, resulting in variation of the inventory levels based on the difference between demand and production. So you are making 100. So in the first month, your inventory is going to remain constant. You opened with a certain inventory. Now you produced 100 and you sold 100. In the second month, you produced 100, you sold 120. So your inventories actually went down, right? And in the third month, you produced 100, but you sold 80. So that means you again added something back to the inventory. And if you see, this is the chart which talks about the level planning strategy. So if you see here, this is the production level. The demand is varying. It could be a seasonal variation, you know, and the production is constant. That means if you are producing 100, you continue to produce 100 irrespective of the demand. Now, generally, this kind of a scenario, we'll first look at this. It has a constant production capacity irrespective of the variation in the demand, resulting in a stable workforce. But the building up of inventory during the slack period, demand period, incurs high carrying cost. But there is a reason why we use this strategy. So assume that you have a constraint in your production. You only can produce 100 numbers per month. Now, you know that your average demand is 100 per ton, but it is or 100 numbers per month. But it is not constant every month. So some month it could be 100, some months it could be 120, and some months it could be 80. So you decide to continue to produce 100. And whenever the demand is low, you build up the inventory. And whenever the demand peaks, then you sell from the inventory. So here, you are making full use of your production capacity. The only compromise here is you are going to carry inventory during the slack period. So when the demand is less in the market, you are going to build up the inventory, and then you're going to incur the inventory carrying cost. So as I said, this kind of a strategy is where you have a limitation of the demand. You are making a highly specialized product, which only you can produce. If you have to put additional capacity, it doesn't justify, because your total demand, overall demand, is what your capacity is. And putting additional capacity will also mean a high capital expenditure. So in such a case, this is the kind of a strategy that you use. We come to the third strategy, which is the subcontract strategy. So this strategy involves the continuously producing an amount equal to the minimum of the demand over the planning horizon and subcontracting the extra demand. Few companies make everything or buy everything they need. The decisions about which items to buy and which to manufacture depends mainly on the cost, but there are several other factors like confidential processes, quality levels, and to maintain a workforce. So let's understand what is this subcontracting strategy. Assume that you have a limit on what is the maximum amount you can produce. You have your own manufacturing facility. So what you do is you continue to flog your capacities. You use your capacities to the fullest. And wherever the demand is higher, you have two options. Either you subcontract or you put in additional capacities. But let us say that you do not wish to put additional capacity because it is not giving you the return on investment. That means whatever investments you're going to make, the returns are not that lucrative. So in that case, you take this opportunity to fill the excess demand by subcontracting. That means either you subcontract the production or you outright just purchase the product. This is done in many industries. In FMCG, you will see if you buy the product, a product like a toothpaste or a shaving cream, it will tell you it is manufactured by so and so. It will be some small company in some Vapi or Ankleshwar or some such place, marketed by the FMCG company. So it will be a multinational FMCG company which is actually marketing the product. Now, if you look at this strategy, and especially you will see it in toothpaste, etc., there is a wide range of toothpastes that every company is marketing. And there will be some premium brands which are sold at a premium and which are supposed to be highly specialized. They may be medicated, etc. So what the companies do is they will actually produce only those high value items or items which have a intellectual property. That means there is some secrecy, some formulations which they do not wish to reveal outside, right? And the commodity products which are there, you know, the typical white toothpaste or, you know, the run of the mill kind, which is the commodity kind of a product, these will be outsourced. So this will be subcontracted. So this is exactly the point which is made here, that what they will subcontract depends on various factors such as, you know, the confidential processes, etc. The major advantage of this strategy is cost. Cost associated with excess capacity are avoided. So, you know, if you are going to invest, now you're not sure whether you will be able to fill your capacities consistently. Or it could be, because let me tell you that many a times the multinationals, they have so many compliances. They have to make sure that, you know, minimum wages are paid, the people are, you know, having the right PPE. There are so many safety controls which are required. Whereas if you outsource the material, there are people who have a much lower cost footprint and they are able to make the product much cheaper. So you don't want to invest in your own facility, which is going to make the product much, much more costly because of the overheads. So it could be this one factor. Or you don't have a consistent load which is going to occupy your new investment or the new capacity that you're going to add. So in such a case, you will take recourse to this particular strategy. So the advantage of this strategy is cost. Cost associated with excess capacity are avoided. And because production is leveled, there are no costs associated with changing the production levels. So even you could be making one product consistently, the premium product, and you don't have too many changes, you know, in your production schedule. The main disadvantage is that the cost of purchasing, the item cost, purchasing, transportation and inspection cost may be greater than if the items were made in the plant. Now, this may not always be true, but yes, in some cases, you need to look at this, whether outsourcing the product or subcontracting the product is going to be more expensive. Sometimes by subcontracting, you are also entering into a tolling arrangement where you supply the raw material and you get the finished product, and all that you pay to the subcontractor is the conversion charges. So you need to look at whether the additional cost of, you know, sending the material out, paying the conversion cost and getting the material back, or even, you know, keeping a person there in that plant to ensure that the quality standards are maintained. Because if the example we took of FMCG, these are products, you know, personal care products, where compliance is very, very important. So you cannot have unhygienic conditions, etc., because these products are actually going into your mouth or so. Okay. So we come to the next strategy, which is the hybrid strategy. So the chase strategy, level strategy and subcontract strategy are known as pure strategies, because, you know, here you are using a strategy which is a standalone strategy. And they have their own cost implications, each of these strategies, in terms of carrying inventory or changing the production capacity, subcontracting, etc. To achieve cost benefit, a number of combination of the strategies can be formulated, which are also known as the hybrid strategy. So this is what we are talking about, the hybrid strategy. So here it is the hybrid strategy. So imagine here that you are having a certain capacity. This is the maximum you can produce. Okay, this is the peak capacity. So what we do is, when the demand is low, we actually produce less because we don't want to carry inventory. But when the demand is high, this is the best we can produce. So what we do is, during this period, we will subcontract. So we will again subcontract the commodity items, and the premium item is what we will make in-house. So in a hybrid, you are using the strategy intermittently. So here you are using a chase strategy, and or it could be part chase, and or it could be even the level strategy, you know. So you may actually come here and start making the maximum product once you are your capacity is saturated, and then when the demand goes above, then you start subcontracting. So it's a hybrid, that means it's a mix of two or more strategies. So cost involved in various strategies. So the basic cost involved in the alternate production planning strategies include the base production cost, the inventory cost. Base production cost is what is your own production cost. So we talked about, you know, in multinationals, generally there are a lot of compliance, and many times the compliances in multinational companies are not with the local standards, but the standards of the principal. So that the principals are from Europe, then the European standards, they will insist that you you know, make your facilities and everything and safety standards are followed as per the European standards. This is because the companies have a brand value and an image to protect. They do not want any mishap or anything to happen which will tarnish the image, because we are in a global economy where anything happens in one country affects the principal company in whichever country they may be located. So the base production cost, the inventory costs. So what is the inventory carrying cost? So we saw the hybrid strategy where you are doing chase during some part of the year, you are resorting to level strategy for certain part of the year, and then you are subcontracting certain part of the year. Now you may be doing this because the inventory carrying costs are very high, so you do not want to overproduce. So you had the option of producing to the full capacity, but you didn't want to do it because the inventory carrying cost or the time horizon for which inventory needs to be held is pretty long. What are the production rates? What is the production capacity? What is the change cost? So we talked about, you know, many times when you change a product from one product to the other, you have to clean the entire equipment. We saw the case of the paper mill where you the felt has to be changed on the paper mill, the paper machine. And mind you, these machines are huge. I mean, the length of a paper mill, the paper machine, will be something like 100 meters or even longer in some cases. So if you have to clean this kind of a machine and you have to change the felt, there is a huge cost involved in doing so. What are the capacity related costs? So even, you know, if you have to add the capacity, what is the kind of a cost which is going to be incurred? Because there are some processes where the equipment which is required, you know, are very expensive. And if you have to add the capacity, then there is a huge capital investment, and one has to look at what is the ROI, what is the return on investment on that kind of a capital investment that you're going to make. So base production cost, these are the base costs incurred for producing each unit, which includes the cost component of labor, equipment, material, overheads. These costs are the same for all alternative strategies. So obviously, I mean, when we are talking of our own manufacturing, depending upon the kind of manufacturing we have, the kind of labor we have, the kind of labor, the wages that we are paying them, they will be more or less same for all the strategies. So these costs are same for all the alternative strategies and are not generally considered while comparing the cost of various alternative production planning strategy. So whether you do a chase or you do a level or you do a subcontracting, as far as what you are producing, your costs are going to be more or less the same. Inventory cost, these costs include the cost of holding and carrying inventory. And we saw carrying inventory means one, you're blocking the working capital. Two, you require the warehouse. So you are investing in a warehouse. You are investing in the hardware in a warehouse. So you may have a racking structure. You require reach trucks or forklift trucks to basically handle the material. And you require staff to actually run the warehouse. You require IT solutions to manage the warehouse. So these are all costs. And these have to be considered. Cost of stockout, pilferage, obsolescence. So we talked about this in one of the previous chapter, that inventory carrying cost is not just the working capital cost, which is blocked up, or the cost of your warehouse. Any pilferage, any loss, breakage, obsolescence, any deterioration of the product, all these are added to the cost. Because let us say that you find that in a warehouse, there is a 1% loss because of all these reasons. So we took the example of ball bearings, and let us say that some ball bearings, they got corroded. So then these are all the part of the losses, and these are added up to the inventory carrying cost, because these write-off are then written to the inventory carrying account. Production rate and production capacity and change cost. So these costs include the change in production rates or the production capacity caused due to starting, stopping a production facility, hiring and layoff, change in resources, etc. Many of the units, have this continuous operations, but in many places you also have, the unit working only in two shifts, or sometimes they work only for a certain number of days in a month. Now, every time you start and stop a unit, in some processes, there is a huge cost involved. Now, I talked about, one of the companies that I worked for was an aluminum company, and which used to make aluminum out of bauxite. So they used to make the alumina. Then they used to make the aluminum, which used to be cast in form of ingots or so, which will be then made into downstream products like aluminum sheet, aluminum foil, or extrusions. So when you make alumina into aluminum, right? These are electrical cells, or what we call as a smelting pots, where the aluminum is made. And this is an electrolysis process. And mind you, each pot, if you had to shut down a pot, it was a very lengthy process. And if you had to start the pot again, that means once you have stopped a pot, the molten metal inside solidifies. You had to clean up everything before you could restart it. And the pot is also at a high temperature, so you have to let it cool down, which takes a couple of days. And then to restart it, you have to heat the pot by, with the help of coal or gas or something. And then you can start the electrolysis process again. Let me tell you that way back in the 90s, typically the cost of restarting a pot used to be something like 70,000-80,000 rupees, which in those days was a huge amount of money. So if you look at it today, it will be even higher than that. So this changeover or the start and stop, also many equipment, they need to stabilize. So if you shut down the equipment and when you restart it, then you need to stabilize the operation. So for some time there will be some bad material generated or off-spec material generated before it starts giving you the right quality. So all these are considerations when you are looking at your change costs. Capacity related costs. So these costs are incurred due to the capacity related changes caused by subcontracting, outsourcing, working overtime, etc. So, I mean, if you find that your overtime costs are high, because again, as I said, in the organized sector, people are highly paid based on their experience, etc. And the overtime you pay sometimes can be very heavy. So all these costs are to be taken into consideration when you are making a make or buy decision. So whether, you know, we should give overtime to the people and make it in-house, or whether we outsource it.